ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival for Wednesday night. This is the 19th day of July, year of our Lord, 2017. James Corbett will be joining me after the first break. He'll be here in about 20 minutes, calling in from Japan. James Corbett, of course, does the Corbett Report, and we'll talk more about James and the Corbett Report and some intelligent discussion in just about 20 minutes. First off, here's the market report for today. Gold was down $1 and to $1,242 per ounce. Silver was off 1 cent to $16.36 per ounce. Platinum was down 7 to $9.24. Palladium was down 5 to $8.66. All I have to do is get my... There it is. Just got to tighten up the nut behind the steering wheel and we're good to go. U.S. dollar index was down 0.06. Well, it is down 0.06 in the aftermarket. It's currently 94.78. It was 103 points back, maybe the beginning of the year. It's down substantially to 94.78, and we can reasonably wonder how far the U.S. dollar index is going to fall. Crude oil is off 4 cents, at least in the aftermarket, and is currently $47.08 per barrel. Crude has done well. It's made a nice recovery from down near 40. It's going back up, but my long-term feeling is that crude oil is maybe a dying technology. I won't say a dying technology, but it's a diminishing technology. Do any people know how to find it? Supply is too great. Demand is too low. Looks like low prices for far into the future from my perspective. Dow Jones is up 66 points today to 21,641. NASDAQ was up 41 to 6,385. New York Stock Exchange was up 64 points to 11,941. Standard & Poor's was up 13 points to 2,474. All right, having said that, let's see if we can find something to talk about here for the next 15 minutes or so. And let's see, do I have something to talk about? I believe I do. Let's start with this. This just irritates me, amazes me. I look at this as a story that I would not have dreamed was possible. For most of my life, I'm 72 years old, and for most of my life, in fact, probably the first 70 years, maybe even 71, there's a story that I could not have imagined. And yet here it is. This is from Prophecy Newswatch, and the headline is GOP House OKs Obama's Bizarre Transgender Policy. Now, this is just astonishing to me. Should taxpayers fund sex changes and hormone therapy for soldiers, sailors, and Marines who suffer from gender dysphoria and are in the process of transitioning from male to female or vice versa? That's the question, ladies and gentlemen. Who would have imagined this could even be a question? I mean, for most of my life, this is like speaking in tongues. Taxpayers should fund sex changes and hormone therapy for soldiers, sailors, and Marines who suffer from gender dysphoria and in the process of transitioning from male to female or vice versa. I mean, it's just amazing to me. The article continues. It says, yes, say all of the Democrats in the House of Representatives and 24 Republicans in the House, an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2018, it would have banned Pentagon funding for surgeries for transgenders in the U.S. Military, failed to pass the House Thursday night by a vote of 209 to 214. Not only did 24 Republicans cross over and vote with the Democrats, the taxpayers should fund the process of changing your gender. 24 Republicans sided with the Democrats, but another 6 Republicans did not even bother to vote. on Representative Vicky Hartzler's amendment that would have banned such funding. Hartzler, a Republican from Missouri, said the issue at hand was one of national decline and how best to maintain military readiness, not whether one supports transgenderism. She kept the arguments focused on readiness and economics, and of course she lost. Now, it shouldn't be focused transgenderism, what she's saying. We're not against transgenderism. We're just trying to keep the military strong and, you know, do what we have to do for our economy. I am against transgenderism. I'm not against it in the sense that I would say it has to be outlawed, but I think it has to be recognized for what it is. It's an expression of insanity. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm certainly not licensed to give medical advice, but it seems obvious to me and virtually undeniable. You can't argue effectively to the contrary that people who want to cut off their own private parts aren't crazy. Right? I don't care how you slice it and dice it. Excuse the pun. But people who want to change their sex by mutilating their bodies are, in my opinion, nuts. Huh? And what we have here is a Congress that says, oh, no, it's quite normal. It's quite normal to want to cut off your private parts. There's nothing wrong with that. We have people in the that are psychiatrists, psychologists, licensed to make medical judgments as to whether people are crazy or not, and they're dealing with this is as if this is normal. This is understandable. This is rational. And I'm going to say it is as irrational as if I sat here on the talking end of the microphone and one by one snapped every one of the fingers off my right hand. I keep my thumb in case I have to hitchhike home. But other than that, just start snapping the four fingers off my hand. Would anyone listen and say, you know, I think that guy's a little crazy. He's cutting all his fingers off. That's crazy. Okay, maybe I would agree. What about cutting off your private parts? I mean, come on. This is an expression of madness. If we are going to allow people and say, oh, this is quite normal, this is okay, you can cut off your private parts and we're going to deal with it as if it's rational, how about people cut off their own heads? When they get done chopping off their heads, should the government fund their funeral? Can we put their heads on a big silver platter? No, not silver, a golden platter. And all their friends can party down while they dance around the table holding the guy's head? And should the government pay for it? And if not, why not? If the government's going to pay for somebody to cut off his own private parts, I mean, why not pay him to cut off his head? Or maybe his arm or a leg or whatever. You know, there's a point here where if it's legal and rational to cut off your own private parts, I'm wondering if you can't turn around and sue your insurance company for losing your private parts. Is there a liability error? I mean, if you lose an arm or a leg, a hand, you know, your medical insurance will cover it. They'll pay off on a certain amount of money. Should they pay off on losing your private parts? After all, it is, according to the government and the Psychiatric Association, it is a rational act. It's reasonable, legal, lawful. So if you go in there and you get mutilated, can you sue the insurance company to pay you? How much can you insure your private parts for anyway? Which interests, which there's a whole bunch of questions that'll flow from that, but I'm not going to get into those. But in any case, you know, you wonder what's happening in this country, and this to me is just an illustration of people that have lost their minds. And the rest of us just sit there and say, well, okay, if they want to cut their private parts off, that sounds rational to me. No, it's not. That's crazy. It says, the article continues, it says, but under President Obama and former Defense Secretary Ash Carter, and what they say first off is that transgenders would, up until 2015, transgenders would have been discharged from the service based solely on the fact that he was confused about his gender. Gender dysphoria has always been considered by the American Psychiatric Association to be a psychological condition. Well, indeed, it's a psychological condition. But it goes beyond that. I mean, this is not normal. This is not acceptable. It cannot be. But under President Obama and former Defense Secretary Ash Carter, that all changed. The U.S. military not only acknowledged transgenders to enlist, but it began recruiting them. Recruiting them. The modern action army. Okay? They are recruiting transgenders. When I got out of the army, I was in for 2 years from 65 to 67. And when I got out, I was entitled to go to college and receive some subsidy from the government as part of the GI Bill. Some people, so the subsidy grew more generous over the years, and some people joined the army with the primarily to get money to go to college. And put in a couple of years in the army, get up enough money where you can go through the first couple of years of college, maybe you can get a full scholarship. That was my day. Now, the Army is recruiting transgenders and offering, are you transgender? We're looking for you because we will pay to have the operations and the hormone therapy. Now we're going to have transgender people joining the military to let the taxpayer pay for their sex change operations. And this is supposedly reasonable and rational. The only question up for vote by the House on Thursday was whether the taxpayers should foot the bill for the transgenders' transitional surgeries and hormone treatment. And of course they voted that taxpayers, that's what they're bred for, that's what they're born to do. Pay taxes for every fool program the government can come up with. So of course they voted that the taxpayers should fund the transgenders, and I look at this as just one more illustration of how crazy the world has become, and it's not over. You know, I mean, it gets crazier all the time. Here's another one. This is from The Guardian. I believe it's an English publication, and the headline is Hillary Clinton is more unpopular than Donald Trump. Let that sink in. That's the headline. It says the reason for her low appeal and need to be confronted, by the Democratic establishment. And it could be wrong to pin all these on sexism. Donald Trump is one of the least popular politicians in the history of the United States, yet Trump is still more popular than Hillary Clinton. All right? We see reports on a daily basis, a regular basis, that there's one poll or another out confirming that Trump is unpopular with the public. I think it's only 49% that support Trump right now. It's a little less than a majority, but thereabouts. But Hillary is, with her, it's even less. It's like 46 or something like that support her, and that's after 6 months of resistance, trying to do what they can to get rid of, trying to do what they can to discredit Trump and supposedly support Clinton, and nevertheless, more people dislike Clinton than dislike Trump. That is another strange story. It indicates that we had two candidates who are not simply polarizing in the sense, well, I'm a Republican and you're a Democrat and we can't get together. It's not just politics. We had two candidates, each of which were almost equally despised by the American people. What does that say about our political system? What's it say about our values and where we've been and where we're going? The Republicans managed to nominate a candidate who I like. But they managed to nominate a candidate who ultimately was despised by almost half the people in this country. But the Democrats did the same, and their candidate was even a little worse. What does that say about our right to choose? What does it say about mainstream politics? Republicans, Democrats, what are the parties doing? It certainly indicates that neither party is really in touch with the American people. It may be that the Democrats are out of touch with the middle class and upper middle class and so on. That's probably true. It may be that the Republicans are out of touch with a different class of people, the lower classes and lower middle classes. That's probably true. But there is no centrist candidate. Of the two candidates that ran for president, neither one really represents middle America. Neither one represents consensus values. And all by itself, you have to wonder, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Or is it no thing at all? Is it a triviality? Should we be concerned about it, or is it just had an odd election? Last thing I want to talk about is cybersecurity. And the reason I want to talk about it is we remind people on this program on a regular basis that the digital currencies, the cryptocurrencies, are dangerous because they can be vaporized and made to disappear in a moment's notice. Not even a notice, just bang, they're gone. Poof. Magical. If you store your wealth in the form of digital currencies, you are probably going to have, you are vulnerable to having your wealth disappear. And here's an article from Station X, brief article on cybersecurity, and it says one of the things that bothers him the most. Station X, they deal with cybersecurity. They teach people how to make their computers maximally secure, but not perfectly. And he says people ask him, he has customers and clients, they want 100% security. He says it bothers him because people don't understand there cannot be 100% security. People believe that complete security can be achieved and that complete security is required by law or industry practice. Neither is true. The most you can get is reasonable levels of security. Complete security is not required or even realistic. He points out that if you had a cell phone, for example, and you wanted complete security, you need to conduct three steps. First, put your cell phone in airplane mode where it can't communicate with anybody. Second, place the cell phone in a Faraday cage, which is a wire cage made out of copper or whatever that will prevent radio waves from entering inside that cage. Place your phone in the Faraday cage, and third, lock the device in a secure safe, meaning you can't get at it. And I've talked about this on other programs in the past, where it was obvious to me that we can't count on cybersecurity. Nothing secure that's in contact with the internet. Can't be. Because it is accessible, easily accessible to billions of people. And that necessarily means it's easily accessible to hackers and thieves and crooks. And the point behind this, we've advanced that idea for, I don't know, a number of times on the program. But here's somebody who's a professional. He's essentially saying, that's right. You can't have complete security. You can only have partial security. You're going to town looking for a new virus protection program that offers perfect security, and the truth is none of them do, none of them can. As long as this internet system is as easily accessible as it is impossible to provide perfect security. You can minimize the threats, but you cannot eliminate them. So we're going to take a break for a couple of commercial announcements, and James Corbett will be joining us shortly on Financial Survival. James, of course, will be calling in from Japan. He's from thecorbettreport.com, and please stay tuned. I'll be right back with James Corbett.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Haddisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with my guest, James Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, from thecorbettreport.com. James produces some of the best videos, podcasts, written articles on intelligent, intellectual subjects like geopolitics, markets, and so on. You're going to be hard-pressed to find better work than you can get from James. Hello, James. How are you doing?
Can't complain. How are you doing?
Got me. All right. Got an article here that developing. This is from Conservative Tribune. Clinton-linked death shakes Democrats and media panics. That's the headline. There's a running conspiracy regarding the astonishing number of people who've mysteriously ended up dead, either through odd accidents or suicide, after becoming involved with or threatening to expose alleged misdeeds of former President Bill Clinton and his wife, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. You know, back in the 90s, I believe it was Congressman Dannemeyer, and I might not have the name correctly, it's 20, 25 years ago. He created a list at the time of 26 people who'd been closely associated with Bill Clinton who had died under violent or mysterious circumstances. Suicides, murders, mysteries, 26 people dead. I don't know 26 people. There aren't 26 people I've known in all my life who are dead, right, that I've known in any kind of a personal relationship. And after that list grew to 42. I have no idea where it is right now, but we see allegations and suspicions that someone who had threatened to expose some of Bill and or Hillary's chicanery has turned up dead again. Do you think this is a groundless conspiracy theory, or do you think there's fire to go along with the smoke?
Well, okay, so you're referring to the Clinton body count, which I do suggest people take a look at online, and you can see the list of people. And like any of these body counts, I think some of them very much suspicious, some of them stretching a little bit. So, I mean, take the combined total with a grain of salt. And to the point, I don't know 26 people who have died under mysterious circumstances or even died whatsoever, but then again, politicians, especially people who have run for president, have met hundreds, thousands of people along the way. So one would assume they'd know more people. But having said that, again, I think each case has to be taken on a case-by-case basis. And I haven't done a great deal of digging into these latest ones, but there was this Republican operative, Peter Smith, who told the media that he had been involved in trying to obtain Hillary's emails from Russian hackers, and 10 days later died in very exceptional circumstances. It was ruled, of course, immediately a suicide, no foul play by the quote-unquote authorities. So take that for what it's worth. But apparently went to a hotel room in Rochester and placed a bag over his head that was attached to a helium source of some kind as his way of saying, shuffling off this mortal coil 10 days after having said that that he was involved in the Clinton email thing or trying to get involved. So, I extremely suspicious. And again, this is just one of many, many, many. And I'd like to think that this doesn't really, I mean, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but I mean, on the political scale, that's, you know, the Clinton body count certainly is there, and they have piled up the bodies in the past, but now they're just doing kind of rear guard action to make sure they don't get thrown in jail as they coast off, you know, into their final years. But believe it or not, Hillary has at least floated the idea that she is thinking about a 2020 presidential run. And, of course, we know that Chelsea Clinton is being groomed for some sort of congressional or Senate run. So, unfortunately, the Clinton dynasty is still here, and it's something that people still need to take a look at. So I think the Clinton body count, again, I hope people will search it for themselves and take a look at some of the cases, because there are absolutely ones in there that stink to high heaven. And
Foster is a classic.
Of course. And we're just approaching the 24th anniversary of that, I think.
I don't know. It's hard to believe. I remember when it happened. And the thing that impressed me about it, there were a bunch of things. They found his body out in the park. No mud on his shoes, although he allegedly walked out into the park in soft ground. There should have been mud or grass stains or something on his shoes. Nothing. They found him out there. They alleged that he had committed suicide. And what really set me off, that was all, I didn't pick up on that, those facts instantly. But the very next day, I remember seeing Bill Clinton, President of the United States, speak publicly on the matter, and he said, well, we may never find out who killed good old Vince. Well, he didn't say good old Vince, but we may never find out who killed Vince Foster. If I'm the President of the United States and I have access to the CIA and the FBI and the NSA and whatever, and someone who worked in the White House is dead under strange circumstances, I'm guarantee you I'm not going to admit within 24 hours that we may never find out what happened. I'm going to put everybody to work, because if they can get one of the people in the White House, maybe they can get me. I mean, it was just one of those things. It was Clinton's statement was off the cuff, but I thought it was extremely revealing. He knew we weren't going to find out who killed Vince Foster, because he already knew.
Exactly. And the further you go down that hole, you find out about Arkansas, which was the Clintons' body count when they were still in Arkansas. And even at that time, the bodies were piling up, and you had the corrupt coroner there, Fahmy Malak, who, for example, ruled that one of the witnesses to the MENA drugs operation that Clinton was presiding over as governor at that time was found decapitated, and was ruled a death due to natural causes, and that the head had been eaten by a dog. Of course, that was somewhat problematic because the head was later sawn off of the body and found in one piece. But at any rate, that was the official ruling. It was a death due to natural causes, a decapitation.
Another article here from Natural News, and the headline is America is Arming Up. Record background checks recorded during the first half of 2017, and the essence of the article is that more people are buying pistols, rifles, shotguns, whatever. We've had a record count in the first six months of the year, apparently. Do you think this is a coincidence? Does it somehow reflect the Clinton body count? I don't mean as a direct cause. I don't mean people see the Clinton body count and they say, oh, my God, I'm going to go buy a gun for myself. But is there a correlation here, evidence of some sort of a national mood where people are more prone to violence today than maybe they were? They're more concerned about being victimized.
Well, we do know that for the first time in decades, the violent crime rate in the large cities in the United States is starting to go back up after decades of falling crime rates. And the most interesting thing that I've heard, but haven't really deeply researched myself, but I'm going to, is the correlation between lead, as in lead paint and lead in the gas and all of that, and violent crime. And
is that
when
right?
That was taken out, you see the decline in violent crime rates. So I'm very interested to look at that connection. But nonetheless, for whatever reason, we are currently seeing at least the potential of a turnaround in those crime rates dropping, and that would be a very good reason for people to start thinking about personal protection. Also, couple that with the general sense of economic angst. I think everyone understands that the phony recovery post-2008 was phony and is being bought by the central banks of the world, acting with their easy, funny money liquidity. And when that turns around and you know, the other foot drops, I think everyone knows where that's going, and the breakdown of society that could very easily occur in the event of a major economic crisis. So there's lots of reasons why people might be doing that. I just find it interesting because, of course, we saw the spike, the record gun sales that were happening when Obama got into office and was talking, there was serious talk about gun control. But now Trump is in office, you would think that the pendulum would have swung, but now people are still buying in record numbers. Clearly, this is more of a societal issue than a political one.
What do you think drives it? Well, I mean, you just explained that you think that the economy is getting more, is becoming more difficult. People are becoming more anxious. Is that enough to explain it? Is it just a question, it's the economy stupid? Is that what it is?
Well, I mean, I think it's the confluence of all these factors, all of which play into each other, and I think the economic might be the underlying driving factor of this, but it's not necessarily the one people are thinking of when they go into a gun store. And I think what people are thinking of, I mean, it is quite evident that America is heading towards some sort of crisis. I don't know, civil war might be too far, but at any rate, we do see more and more of this violence spilling out onto the streets in various ways, these protests and counter-protests. It is in the air, and I think you'd have to be living under a rock not to see, hear, or feel that at the moment. And I think people are picking up on that, and one way that that manifests is in gun sales.
I saw an article just yesterday or today. I talked about it earlier on this radio program, but they've discovered the polls are out on a regular basis that President Trump is perhaps one of the least liked presidents we've ever had. But what they've recently determined is we like Hillary even less. Now, that's evidence of an extraordinary polarization. We've had two candidates run for president, and both of them were almost equally despised by the American people, different segments of the American people, but there is a kind of polarization, and people didn't like Hillary, they still don't like Hillary, and not a little bit, they don't like her a lot, and people who didn't like Trump, well, this is the polarization that could underlie, you mentioned the possibility of some sort of conflict, you didn't want to say civil war, but there is something going on, and we see evidence of that. You would think that people would, after Hillary was joined with the resistance against President Trump, you would think that her approval rating was rising. But nope, still worse than his is. When was the last time we had two candidates that were both equally despised by the American people? And what does that mean?
I think this means that this is the inevitable end stage of the democratic process, because of course people like to point out that the United States is not a democracy, it's a republic, but in reality it's a democratic republic, and you vote in these puppets to pretend to rule over you every 4 years. And in this case, I mean, this is where it ultimately ends up. It's always a question of voting for the lesser of two evils, and once you go far enough down that spiral, you end up getting two completely despicably evil candidates to choose from, and which one smells a little less like sulfur than the other. And that's who you end up going for. And unfortunately, this is the way it's played out. And I mean, it just speaks to the system and the way it's been set up and the way people have been taught to believe in it, as if this is the way to move forward in society, so that people are now really defining themselves by their hatred. Do you hate Clinton or do you hate Trump? That is the way people define themselves politically at this point, rather than, you know, which one do you actually like? And that's, I mean, what else can you say? That is a sign of a society in collapse. That is the end stages of any empire.
I think you're right. I think it's a good point that we vote for the lesser of two evils. And that's true. How many candidates have we ever actually voted for? Or said, this guy's great. It's happened. You know, but mostly we don't vote for the one that we think is great. We vote against the one that we think is horrific.
There's an interesting thing to add to that, actually, which is that people generally tend to vote for the one that they think is going to be less warmongering. That's at least one of the factors that plays into this. And you can think back to Bush Jr. when he was running and said, we have to have a humble foreign policy and all of that. That's what he got elected on, and, well, that kind of changed over the course of administration. People obviously voted in Obama because, well, I think he probably was less of a warmongering crazy than McCain, at any rate, and people believed he was going to be the Peace Prize president and follow through in all his rhetoric. Of course, he did not. And people voted in Trump, as a recent poll has shown, because people believed Hillary was going to send America into more wars, and they didn't want that. So they vote for what they think is the other option. So people at least have some sort of rational reasons for voting the way they do, although I think the process of voting itself, as if that is the solution to this, is perhaps the irrational point.
I think the irrational point may be in trusting these people to be the person they portray themselves to be when they run for office.
Yes.
I mean, so-and-so says he's for peace, so I'm for him. Well, so what? I mean, when did that make a difference? How many presidents have we seen since Jimmy Carter who actually wound up being as peaceful as they portrayed themselves to be? I think Carter might have been genuinely a peace candidate in his own way. He was dragged into a war. I don't think it's something he wanted. But since then, I don't know. We make, and then before then, we hear promises and promises and don't seem to ever come true. Are we crazy because we trust in those promises?
Yes. To answer your question, in a word, yes. I think it is insanity. And that's the worst part of all of this, is that people, as I say, they may have a rational basis. Well, I want less war. I want less warmongering, so I'll go for the candidate that promises less. But again, it's idiocy to believe at this point that any candidate is going to actually deliver on that. So, I don't know. I mean, that obviously leaves the question, well, if not voting, then what? But at any rate, it certainly means that voting is not the cure-all panacea to this. And concentrating the national attention on votes and elections so that here in 2017, we're already talking about 2020, it's a never-ending circus.
I know.
That keeps people entertained and distracted.
I know. Just when you thought it was safe, it's like one of those horror movies where they finally kill the creature, and then next thing you know, the creature comes back to life, and it's there. You thought you got it, but you didn't. Just when you thought it was safe, and it's never safe, apparently. And maybe that's the lesson. Maybe our confidence, our trust, is just irrational, and we need to understand that. We can't wait. We can't be expecting that this candidate is going to save us. It kind of puts the responsibility, if you're going to be saved, you're going to have to play a big part in that salvation yourself, rather than rely on some other man, politician, woman, whatever. Is that a good thing for society, for making people more responsible? Or being more responsible, does that translate into being more paranoid? You have about 40 seconds.
Well, I think that was the founding ethos of the United States. I think that's the aspiration or the ideals of the so-called founding fathers. America was built on the idea, at least, of liberty. I'm not sure it's ever lived up to that, but that's the idea. And that's the founding spirit of the people who came and risked it all to come over to a new land and to try something different and to try to cast off the shackles. And here we are a couple hundred years later, and people seem to have willingly put on a lot of those shackles and are afraid of the idea of freedom. And that's a shame. I think that spirit is still there, waiting to be rediscovered and rekindled. But again, I don't think it's going to happen through a political process.
We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials, and I'll be right back with James Corbett on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Who Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Addis, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. My guest is James Corbett from the CorbettReport.com. And we're going to try something vague here. I usually try to have a semi-specific question. But James, he kind of suggested, why don't we try what's happening? And I don't think he meant that, hey, what's happening, James? I don't think that's quite what you had in mind, but what is happening?
Oh, dear. I actually wasn't expecting you to turn that around on me. Lots of things are happening, but... Where I am? I really want a specific question here. Okay, something that's on my radar.
I thought you would welcome just a generic question.
Well, I do welcome that, and it gives me the chance to put on the table not something that I have thought through to the end or have a specific answer on, something that I actually want to solicit your input on as well, which is the topic of AI, artificial intelligence, which obviously has been swirling around in the headlines for years now, but has gained specific prominence this week with Elon Musk, the great swindler of the American taxpayers, coming out with his big pronouncement, you know, AI is going to kill us all kind of thing. Yet another round of hype. I haven't even watched specifically what he said, but I've read the coverage of it. And it seems that this is being pushed once again. Now, I have, on my own website, in the comment section, I have people who talk about this, and I have people who are very much against the idea that AI is really an impending thing, that this deep learning and machine learning that they're talking about and trying to hype right now is just hype. And I am undecided. I certainly see there is a certain media push around this topic that does make me suspect that we are being pushed into this conversation. But I still believe that there are some things afoot that could very drastically change things in the coming years. And I want to get your take on the extent to which you think AI is a topic that is being artificially pushed into the consciousness, and to the extent that you think it is really real, that a real impending threat.
I don't doubt that it's a real and impending threat. It's going to change things in ways that are going to change the whole world. It's going to take jobs. we see reports and say, oh my gosh, we're going to see this as if it's going to happen in 2050. No, it's going to happen in the, it's happening right now. I've seen where China intended, I saw one report that one of their main industrial project or provinces thought they'd have 80% robots by 2020. China. You would suppose that they are going to do something to keep their people employed, and yet they planned, they predicted that by 2020, 80% of the workers in this particular province would be robots. I mean, and if robots can replace Chinese workers who are not making $50 an hour, they can certainly replace American workers. And this brings us, that brings that universal income idea in, and it raises questions. What is the purpose of money and income in the first place? I think it's the idea that if I make more money than you do, James, I can kind of puff my chest out and say, ha, 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 I'm richer than you are. There is something inherent in money that's kind of that smacks of inequality, because it gives us an identity. Okay, how much money do you make? How much money do I make? How much money does Todd, the producer, make? We can compare ourselves. You know, when we find out, we say, oh, I make more money or I make less money. What happens when we all get the same amount of money? In order to distinguish me from you, from Todd, is it necessary, if we've all got the same amount of money in our wallets, is it necessary for me to resort to violence to establish that I'm the alpha male? Is that what happens here? I mean, there are questions in this that are phenomenal, and no one is equipped to deal with them. They're unprecedented. What are we going to do? What do you think about it? Do you think it's as much, do you think it lives up to the hype, or do you think it's just much ado about nothing? James? All right. Well, this is the first time I've posed a question, and James disconnected in order to avoid answering the question. I'm being facetious. I was going to spring that on James. I know that he would appreciate that a little bit. I'm not sure what happened, but we've lost our guest. Well, we were talking about artificial intelligence and just how big can this be. I think if this is economically sensible for China, who have much lower wage scales than we do in the United States, then it's certain that the robots driven by artificial intelligence are going to make perfect economic sense in this country. And if they make economic sense, if I'm a robot salesman and I can come to your business and I can say, look, we can put this robot behind your desk and you've got somebody sitting there that you pay $50,000 a year and the robot will only cost you $20,000 a year, can you resist that temptation? Can you sit back and say, well, that makes a lot of economic sense, but that's good old Bob I have behind the desk. And Bob and I have always been close, and I certainly wouldn't fire Bob just to put a robot in his place. I'll pay the extra $30,000. Are you going to do that? I guarantee you virtually no business will be able to resist the temptation to hire and employ robots if the artificial intelligence thing moves up and becomes economically irresistible. Robots are cheaper. Robots are going to be here. They're going to get the job. And it's not just a question of being cheaper. They are more accurate. They'll work more hours. They don't get tired. They don't get pregnant. They don't get hungover. I mean, there's a lot to recommend robots. The problem is, what is the point to having a robot? And the point is to manufacture products that we can sell to the people. But what products are the people going to be able to buy if they don't have a job? Everybody who's been replaced by a robot, where is he going to get the money to buy products? And that brings us to this idea of universal income, where the government is going to have to provide a fixed amount of money for everybody in the country. And it means, ultimately, that we're going to give Warren Buffett, see, he's been replaced by a robot running his investment firm. We're going to give Warren Buffett the same amount of money that they give me, or they give the guy across the street, or the janitor down the street, or the guy who's been on welfare for the last 15 years. We're all going to get the same. And if we don't get the same, what will be the basis for deciding that you, for example, are going to get paid $10,000 a year more than I am? You don't do anything. I don't do anything. How come you get $10,000 more than me? Or I get $20,000 more than you? And yet, if we all have the same, I look at this, you know, we see this, we see evidence of this in most species where the males compete for the right to impregnate the females. You see it with deer that grow antler every buck deer that grow antlers every year, and they go out and they fight with the other bucks, and the female will mate with whoever the superior male is. In human civilization, we kind of decide who's the superior deer, who's the alpha male. We do that on the basis typically of money. How much money you got? Well, if you got enough, the females will mate with you. And if you don't have any, you don't expect to get a date. What happens when we all have the same amount of money? Are we all going to just sit back and say, isn't this cool, and gaze to smoke a joint and stare at the sunset? Or are we going to feel compelled, I'm superior to that guy over there, and I'm going to go beat the crap out of him in order to prove my superiority so Becky... the girl of my dreams will come have children with me. What are we going to do? And I don't think anyone has answers to those kinds of questions. I mean, this is the sort of thing where artificial intelligence is going to destroy one of the fundamental means of competition that exists between people in this world. And that competition is a part of the way we identify ourselves. That's Todd, the rich guy, and there's Al, the less rich, and there's James Corbett, who is maybe even less rich than Al. We identify ourselves with our, and we know who we are and how to relate to other people according to this identification. How do I identify myself? Well, how much money do you make? You might not tell people, but they can guess, especially if they're astute. They can judge from your clothing, from your shoes, from the car, from your home. They can say, this guy's really making it, or this guy's really living in poverty, he's a loser. And they change their way they relate to you based on who they perceive you to be. We will relate one way to the local banker, or we will relate another way to the local homeless guy. The Bible says, be not a respecter of persons, but the truth is we are. We do respect each other's person. And sometimes we view it with contempt, and sometimes we view it with great respect or even awe. Admiration. Jealousy. But without that money, without a difference in income, how are we going to identify each other? How will I know how to relate to Todd, our producer, if I don't know whether I'm making more money than he is or he's making more money than I am? We just sit there and we look at each other and say, looks about the same as I am. Do we have to fight? Do we have to go to, fisticuffs or pull out a gun? Or what do we have to do to establish who's the boss? This is going to be one of the kinds of complications that I see, that I foresee coming out of artificial intelligence. And again, if it's cheaper, I guarantee it's going to happen. So long as artificial intelligence costs more than the average ditch digger, you don't have to worry about being. Ditch diggers have no reason to fear the robots. They're more expensive. And long as that's true, the ditch digger has a job. But once the robot can work more cheaply than the ditch digger, or the radio show talk show producer, or the radio talk show host, we're all out looking for. What are we going to do, Todd? Todd, again, is the producer on the program. What are we going to do if you were replaced by robots? Do you have a plan? I don't. I mean, you're going to have to live. We become dependents on top of everything else. If I don't earn my own money, if I don't support myself, I wind up depending on someone else, and in this case, maybe a robot. I have to depend on a robot to generate enough goods and services and whatever to feed me. What happens to my sense of independence and my sense of self-worth when I have to face the fact that I am a dependent? I'm a grown man and I can't support myself. I have to rely on some machine to provide my support. What happens to my sense of self-worth? So, James Corbett proposed the question, and I've been fumbling with it here for the last 10 minutes or so. But it's a very good question, and it's a profound question. And it's evidence that this world, again, we started out this program talking about transgenders, people who are transgenders having their operations and hormones paid by taxpayers because they joined the military. That's crazy. But this business with robots coming in is another manifestation of a kind of insanity. You know, the purpose behind the economy is not simply to build better widgets. The purpose is to sell more widgets to other people who have jobs and therefore earn money where they can pay us enough money for the widgets. I'm going to make a widget here and I'm going to sell it. It cost me $5 to make the widget and I'm going to sell it for $10 and I make $5 for every widget. If I can sell enough widgets, I become a big competitor in the widget market. If I can sell enough widgets, I can buy a new car. I can impress Becky, the cute little redhead with the curly hair. That's why we do these things. What happens when we can't, I've got a robot that's making widgets. I no longer make widgets. What do we need me for? What do we need the customers for? I used to buy widgets. Who's going to buy widgets if they don't have jobs? These are the kinds of questions that I don't think anybody in politics, for example, really wants to talk about, because I don't think there's a painless answer. Our societies are going to be changed dramatically. There is going to be a point. Somebody's going to say, what do we need these people for? They don't produce anything and they don't have enough money to buy anything. Why do we need them? And then where do we go? We're going to leave the program now. I want to thank James Corbett for being on the second segment of the program. I'm sorry he wasn't there for all of the third segment. James will be back in 2 weeks. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'll be back with Melody tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me